Forgive Me would not be possible without our generous parishioners. We'd love to thank Blythe Varney for holding St. Patrick's first ever community craft along. We hope you'll forgive Father Clem for being crass, but he's not quite used to being poked by stray knitting needles. Become a part of our community over at patreon.com/roguedialogue.
Hi, I'm Yusuf Dahl, and when I was 18, I was convicted of selling drugs. For the past 3 years, I've had difficulty finding housing because it is legal in the United States to discriminate against individuals that have a past drug distribution conviction on their record for life. It doesn't matter if it was a hard drug like heroin or a drug that's now legal or partially legal in many states across the country, like marijuana. The Thurman Amendment was introduced to the Fair Housing Act in 1988 by segregationist Strom Thurmond, and it's since been used to deny housing to all people. But because people of color are disproportionately jailed for drug charges, we are affected more. My goal is to overturn this amendment to start an end to housing discrimination that unfairly targets people of color. If you would like to join this movement, please visit ThurmanAmendment.org to learn more.
A message from the Fable and Folly Network. Looking to get out of the ads and back to the story? Fable and Folly Plus is a new way to support the creators you love. The podcast you're listening to right now and more than 60 others can be heard ad-free for as little as $4 a month by visiting fableandfolly.com/plus. And now, you'll start to see Fable and Folly Network shows are offering bonus content to all existing and new supporters. Find exclusive new episodes from shows like Where the Stars Fell, The Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program, and Civilized. Plus, early access to new episodes of Midnight Burger, all still entirely ad-free.
Hey everyone, Adam here. If you missed our little announcement a few weeks ago, this is a crossover special with Windfall, a dystopian science fiction podcast also created by Rogue Dialogue Productions. Fair warning for those of you who haven't listened to season one of Windfall, there are some slight spoilers in this episode. We've got links in the show notes if you want to catch up on it beforehand. One more thing, this episode is showing up in both of our feeds, and each one has a unique ending. So if you want to hear the other side of the story, go check it out in the Windfall feed. We hope you enjoy this little blend of our two shows.
Where on Proxima?
Oh, good. There is somebody else here. I was convinced that I was alone for a while there.
You've taken me out of my cell. What is this, some kind of new interrogation chamber?
I've never been here before either, but it looks a lot more like a confessional to me.
So we're playing semantics then? What is an interrogation if not a series of unwillingly provoked confessions?
Huh. I suppose you do make a good point.
If you're so familiar with these confessionals, what is the purpose of this partition between us?
It's for the anonymity of it all. We find that privacy helps people open themselves up to their own vulnerability in a way that may be otherwise difficult for them.
No, that's nonsense. I have nothing to be vulnerable about.
My lord, you're blue! And are those tentacles on your head?
You act as if you've never seen a Proximan before.
That's because I haven't.
So, if you're not with the humans who captured me, which from the looks of your pitiful rags, does make a certain sort of sense. Who are you?
These aren't rags, thank you very much. And I'm just a friend. Someone who can act as a guiding light for lost souls looking to connect with the Lord.
The Lord. It's fascinating to think that there's a whole species of you out there, worshipping something bigger than yourselves, living your lives just like Queen Wanda, when my people have spent the last several decades treating Her Majesty as nothing less than a god herself.
Now, I may not personally be able to speak for this Wanda, but I can confidently say that if she looks like me, she's not God.
Of course she isn't. What do you take me for, some kind of plebe? I said my people, didn't I? I didn't say me. While I may know how to seek power for myself by riding the coattails of others, that doesn't mean I follow their word blindly like some common sheep.
If I can be so bold, you've mentioned that before you found yourself wherever it is we are, you were in a cell. If you're really that powerful, what got you locked up there in the first place?
Hubris in the face of my world's new masters. I've been punished for trying to sail along with the winds of change rather than knowing my place and keeping to the status quo, as it were.
We're still keeping things purposely vague, then?
I'll give you specifics when I feel you've earned them. If you aren't one of them, and you're instead some lowly prophet from one of their religions, what makes you qualified to give someone as decorated as me advice? In this world or any other?
Whoa now, whoever called me a prophet? I think I'm pretty good at what I do, but I would never go so far as to say that.
Oh good, he's modest.
I like to think so.
That wasn't a compliment.
Where do you think you're going?
Those idiots, whatever they are, left me here without my shackles. I've been looking for my chance to escape, so it seems like now must be it.
You can't do that.
Just you watch me. How in the...
I told you, you can't do that.
I don't know what kind of devilry it is that you humans command, but this is not funny. I have already told your overlords time and time again that I have useful information for them if only I am released and treated with the respect that I deserve.
That's all well and good, but you're not listening to me. I have nothing to do with whoever it is that put us here, and I am just as trapped as you are. I tried it all before you showed up, walking out the door, climbing through the vent in the ceiling, even smashing a hole in the wall. Every way out just leads right back to here.
Why must they taunt me in this way? Dangle freedom in front of my face only to stick me in some new kind of prison with this roach.
Okay, look. I think we've gotten off on the wrong foot. Can we start over? I'm certainly not going to try and convince you why you should listen to any advice that I have to give, but you seem like you're having a rougher day than I am. And if you'd be so willing, I can confidently say that I'm a good listener at the very least.
I suppose I've passed the time in worse ways.
Great, because as long as I'm here with you, I may as well make myself useful. Do you mind if I close the screen again?
As you wish.
There, that's better. So, what should I call you?
I am Captain Octavius Root, the decorated Alpha Wolf of Her Majesty Queen Wanda's Wolf Pack, Chief Security Officer over the entire city of Windfall. And before your more militarized compatriots showed up, you couldn't so much as sneeze within 100 clicks of her castle without me knowing about it. You may call me Root for short.
While none of that means anything to me at the moment, it all does sound rather impressive at the very least. You can call me Father Ben, if you were wondering.
Ha! Oh, the last person I called Father didn't fare so well. I think you'd probably prefer it if I kept it to just Ben.
I'm afraid to ask you what that means.
Just that I've committed some light patricide in my day, that's all.
How does one commit light patricide? Isn't patricide just patricide?
No, not exactly. Not if I'm not the one who pulled the trigger that ended his life. I'm just the one that set the pieces in motion so that it would.
I'm starting to think that maybe it's a good thing we're trapped in here, away from anyone else you can hurt.
Oh, don't worry, Father. I'd say I'd gotten all that gleeful patricide out of my system at this point. So, how does this all work, this listening you do for other humans?
Well, you've kind of already got it down. Folks usually come to me with whatever's weighing on their soul at the moment, whether that be a sin they've committed against someone else that they're feeling guilty about, or just a traumatic experience that they're trying to process. In your case, I'd say that light patricide fits the bill.
But does it? By your own definition, you say that the sins committed should be weighing down on my soul. And, setting aside the simple fact that I don't believe in the very concept of souls, killing my father? It's never weighed me down. In fact, it did quite the opposite. For many years, that one action has quite literally lifted me up above almost every other proximate on this planet.
I have no idea how to begin unpacking all of that, but why don't we go back to the beginning? What is it that drove you to have your father killed in the first place?
My father was a stubborn sort. A heavy laborer from the time I was a small boy, and a principled one at that. Oh, when the castle first appeared and the wolf pack was just forming, he happily took the employment he was offered, building the towers they dreamed would one day reach up to her. He came home each night sweaty and tired and bruised, but still quite satisfied with the way it allowed him to provide for my mother and me. He took great pleasure in knowing that, with every beam of steel he laid in the pursuit of their ultimate goal, he was helping to create what he felt was a better life for his loved ones. Well, at first, anyway.
At first? What changed?
The laws did. You see, my father, like you, was a religious man. He obviously didn't worship whoever this lord it is that you speak of, but he had an avowed love for the old gods of my planet. Kept a shrine to Medina in our home and everything. But the wolf pack, as the years went on and they gained more power, well, they began to outlaw the worship of the old gods in favor of Her Majesty.
All right, heathens, it's time to shut down this little service of yours.
I take it your father didn't take to that change kindly.
No, he didn't. And if it weren't for my mother, he wouldn't have taken to it at all. But she made sure he disassembled his shrine and burnt it out on the community pyre along with the rest of our neighbors. You see, we'd grown quite accustomed to the life that my father's job had brought our family, and we were afraid if he didn't fall in line, we'd lose that status he'd spent years cultivating for us.
And how did that make him feel?
My father? Like the shill he was. He kept his head down and, while he may have grumbled about it over the occasional dinner, went right back to work without speaking out. You see, there was a lot of talk and rumors of open rebellion at that point. People still thought of the Wolf Pack as a fledgling organization that would one day crumble and make room for the ways of the old world to reemerge. But Pop wasn't a joiner. Besides, he was petrified of what my mother and I would do to him if he did.
I'm guessing that fear of his wasn't unfounded?
No, it wasn't. As I've said before, my mother and I had become quite comfortable with our lot in life. We saw the promise of the wolf pack for what it was early on. While Pop was home licking his wounds, we were marching right on down to the recruitment office and signing me up for my first role as a junior cadet in the Wee Wander Scouts wing of the organization.
How was he able to handle this abrupt heel turn? Did he lash out?
Oh, quite the opposite. He gritted his teeth and smiled on my first day of boot camp. After Mother had pressed my uniform and paraded me around the living room, he did his best to exhibit her same sense of pride, even if I was committing myself to the very people who'd torn his religion away from him. He told me I'd looked rather impressive and wished me luck among my fellow cadets. Cadets who were all rather cruel to me, by the way, but that didn't matter, because Mother knew that I was destined for greatness, and made sure to remind me of that every day when she sent me into work.
Understood. So what was the final straw, then, in committing this light patricide that you're so obviously proud of?
Mother and I had just grown weary of his presence. He performed his fatherly duties admirably enough. We were well taken care of, with 3 square meals and a roof over our heads, but we longed for more. And after she'd taken to accompanying me to martial arts practice, she developed a fondness for my general. And who could blame her? He was everything my father wasn't. Charming, well put together, and absolutely rich. So one day when he proposed for her hand in marriage, we set about figuring out a way to dispose of Pop.
And what did that look like?
It was rather brilliant, really. As I'd already told you, my father was a religious man, and though he'd eventually relented and burned his effigies to Medina along with the rest of our neighbors, it was rather easy for the general to help us acquire the materials to rebuild it deep within his closet. And just so happened to discover them as my new boss was joining us in our home for dinner. Father was arrested on the spot, much to his own confusion and dismay. Mother and I played our part, feigning shock at his presumed betrayal, all the while celebrating the Wolfpack officer's present for ridding us of this blight upon our home.
There was no part of you that felt guilty? For sacrificing the man whose labor brought you the original bit of wealth and status that you were protecting in the first place?
Poppycock! He was an absolute, unequivocal disappointment of a man, and if I were given the chance to do over tomorrow, I wouldn't change a damn thing.
The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Did you ever see him again?
Only once. It was after both his farce of a trial and my boot camp training were complete, and I was given the first official posting of my very own. I was granted a brief leave in order to attend his execution, a day I had been counting down the minutes toward since I had first reported him. Upon my arrival, he begged me to help plead his case, to convince his jailers of his innocence and give him another chance at his mediocre existence. But that wasn't what I was there for, no. The reason I attended was to watch as he took his very last breath.
Wasn't that traumatic? Witnessing the ultimate consequence of your actions?
On the contrary, Ben. It was quite the opposite. I learned an important lesson that day, one that I've taken with me for the rest of my life up till this point.
And what was that?
We're only as powerful as we make ourselves out to be. And hardening yourself to that kind of truth? Nay, harnessing it? And realizing that you can take total control over your lot in life if you just stop being so sentimental about it? That, if you can be willing to throw anyone around you in front of the bus, you can get whatever it is that you're feeling you're due? It's intoxicating. The look on my father's face that day, on the day he died by firing squad, it was priceless. And if I hadn't been there to witness it, I don't know if I'd ever have accomplished as much as I have in this lifetime.
That's an incredibly cynical way to make your way through the world.
Oh, perhaps. But it's a powerful one as well.
So, where did your mother land in all of this? I know she had her sights set elsewhere at that point in time, but there must have been some small part of her that regretted sending the man she once loved to his death.
She didn't bat an eye. After publicly denouncing my father's betrayal of our city's values, she accepted the general's marriage proposal and scheduled their wedding ceremony for the very week after his execution. And given that I was now a full-fledged wolf, I was able to perform it myself. Neither of us could be happier with the situation. With Pop out of the picture, we were able to flourish. New clothes, new friends, new apartments. Every whim we'd ever wanted for taken care of, including ones we'd never thought to want for in the first place. We both understood the cost-benefit analysis of the trade we'd agreed to. One life for the world. And we never once hesitated.
Are you sure it's the general that your mother was looking to marry?
I don't follow you.
No, I don't suppose you would. Look, I'm not going to pretend I understand your predicament, current or otherwise. Religious persecution isn't something that I can get behind by any stretch of the concept, and neither is the death penalty for any sin. You speak about this experience as if it has defined the man that you have become in your adulthood, and I can acknowledge that that is likely true. I just can't hazard to say that it has done anything to make you a better or more empathetic person.
Whoever said I was trying to become better? I'm already perfect. Mother knows that. She's always known it, and I have too.
It seems to me like whoever locked you away may have felt otherwise.
That's beside the point.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because we all know that assumptions just make an ass out of me. But I take it your father's wasn't the last life you ended?
Not by a long shot.
And yet, you don't just seem fine with that fact of yourself. You seem proud of who you've become.
That I am.
Try as I might, that won't ever make sense to me. Though I must admit, there's no part of me that'll ever try that hard to empathize with a confessed killer.
I'm not sure about wherever it is that you came from, but here, we live in a world of manufactured scarcity. I learned that from a very young age. There was no reason that my family had any more or less than the family across the street from us, other than the fact that my father was better at cozying up to the right kind of corrupt contractors in order to get the most lucrative jobs out there. There's no way to become wealthy and powerful without willfully taking something from people that you see as deserving of being below you.
As much as I hate to say it, that doesn't sound too different from home. But if it makes any difference at all, I don't believe that it should be. Here, there, or anywhere else for that matter.
Then you never would have risen as high in Her Majesty's ranks as I have.
I think that's probably a good thing, if I'm being honest.
Is it, though? Would you really rather choose a life of poverty over one of unlimited access?
I mean, yes, quite literally. Part of my job entails forsaking personal wealth and romantic entanglements in order to better serve both my god and my community.
Sounds like a shitty job.
I make it work. Why don't you tell me more about yours?
Ah, the wolf pack. How I miss it. Rising through the ranks over the years. For some, it seemed like an impossible hill to climb, but for me, it was nothing but a walk in the park. There's really something about whisper politics that just gets my juices flowing, if you'll excuse me for saying it. I had no problem sniffing out the city's many pockets of would-be revolutionaries and having them squashed like bugs, or framing a fellow recruit for treason when we were both up for the same promotion. I have a bit of a disgusting talent for keeping my friends close and my enemies much, much closer, and for that I've been consistently rewarded. It was all quite delicious. Getting myself to a place where so many of Her Majesty's devotees had to hang on my every single word.
So what changed?
Eventually, I flew too close to the sun.
All of the ruthless killing finally caught up with you?
Quite the opposite. You see, my end, it was predicated by the destruction of a full skyscraper's worth of my Proximan compatriots.
That's terrifying. Who other than Queen Wanda wields that much power in Windfall City?
A stern, impressive woman named Timms with a fleet of warships at her fingertips. The moment we met, I tried to appeal to her kinder nature with promises of my knowledge and influence over the Proximan people. But she had enough foresight to see what a danger someone as cold, calculating, and agreeable as me could pose to her legitimacy.
You're telling me that you witnessed, with your own two eyes, as this Timms woman showed up and committed heinous war crimes, and then you immediately tried to cozy up to her?
Yes.
Wow. What kind of monster are you?
Have you even been listening? I'm exactly the man I want to be.
You know, I'm doing my best over here, hearing you out and trying to find a way to sympathize with you. To understand how someone can wake up one day and choose violence over and over and over again. And though you may argue that the path you've chosen was necessary, the ways in which you've weaponized your power over those less fortunate than you, over your own father, who, from your very description of him, sounds like a perfectly kind man, that's just something I cannot abide by. You and I are living two lives that run so unbearably counter to one another that I don't think there's anything I can do to help you. And while I'd never be so bold as to say that I have the right to judge you myself or decide your fate, there isn't anything I can offer in the way of comfort to you either.
Oh, but there is, Father.
Oh? And what's that?
I'm not sure who put us both here, but I do know that two heads are better than one. You may not have been able to find a way out of this place on your own, and I may have ended up right back here on my escape attempt as well. But who knows what we could accomplish together?
Ah.
See? You don't need to empathize with or understand me. All you have to do is stand up, open up that door, and help me figure out a way to get us both the hell out of here.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
And why the fuck not?
This Timms, whoever she is, she sounds horrifying. And I hope that I never have the chance to cross paths with her. But her decision to lock you up, I can confidently say that that was a good one. And while we may not be on Proxima right now, I'm sure that this is a better place for you to be than out there or in any world, free to cause anyone else any more willful harm. Huh. Look at that. That wasn't there before.
No. Father Ben, wait, come back. If you'll just help me, I promise I'll reconsider my actions. I'll do anything I can to become the better person you want me to be. Just don't leave me here to rot.
I'm sorry, Root. I just don't believe you.
You spineless bastard. You're just like the rest of them. Oh, just you wait. Just you wait until I get out of here. And trust me, I will get out of here. I'll come for you. I'll send you to hell just like I did my father.
Get your eyes up, Benji. I'm hungry.
Yeah, I'm coming.
Jesus Christ, you look like you've seen a ghost.
No, it's nothing like that, but before we go to Pat's, I've got a question for you.
Oh, make it quick. I'm so famished that I want that bran muffin, stat.
Have you ever dreamed about a confession so terrifying that it shakes you to your very core? About a person so hateful, so willfully proud of their heinous acts, that you feel like you may have met the devil himself?
Sheesh. Sounds like somebody's gonna need a nap later.
I'm serious, Clem.
And so am I. You've got to take a break every once in a while, kid. I know you love this job and all, but Lord, it is not worth losing that much sleep over.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I am. Now, get dressed and ready in 10 minutes or I'm leaving without you.
Fat chance I'm letting you drive my car again after last week.
I'd love to see you try and stop me.
Forgive Me is a Rogue Dialogue production. This episode was written and directed by
Bob Ramunda,
Jess Clark,
and
Jack Marone.
Here's our cast in order of appearance.
Casey Callahan, Father Ben.
And
Guard Number One,
Josh Rubino, Root.
And
Father Krem.
Dialogue editing by
Bob Ramunda.
Sound design, score, and mixing by me, Adam Ramunda. All of the graphic design comes from
Sam Twardy.
Find out what we're up to by following at Forgive Me Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Did you like our crossover special? If you did, go follow both Windfall and Forgive Me on your favorite podcast player. If you really enjoyed it, rate it and review it on both Podchaser and Apple Podcasts. Forgive Me wouldn't be what it is today without the endless support and generosity of our patrons. We can't thank you all enough for believing in us as storytellers and helping us compensate all of our actors for the work they do on this show. If you're interested in joining us as a parishioner for access to exclusive bonus content, or maybe even hear your name called out at the top of one of our episodes, learn more at patreon.com/roguedialogue. That's all for this month, but while Season 3 is still a ways away, we've got a lot more fun releases coming your way in the meantime. Check back next month to see what surprises we have in store for you next. Bye.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
If you love actual plays D&D, Hades, or Greek mythology and improv, be sure to check out Rogue Runners, Volume 1, In the Blood, to follow the adventures of Alexander the Great, King of Macedon, and Drunk Paladin.
Oh, sorry. I guess now I'm Alexander the Grump.
Rolf, part-time sorcerer, full-time boomer.
Is it a sex thing?
It was a sex thing!
Arete, stealthy rogue, and even thirstier mobster.
Have you bathed and brought to my tent?
And Annie, legendary bard and chocolate milk fanatic. Together, these four wretched shades will battle their way out of hell for another chance at life, with a little help and hindrance from gods and monsters alike. Word of advice when you're opening up these things, you're supposed to say, Olympus, I accept this message, in some really serious voice.
Take your place among the living again.
Your tactics are adept, if too elegant for my tastes.
My dear, saying no is never a crime.
You hit like a Philistine.
You're not getting out of here alive, wretches.
A pinky promise?
A double pinky promise.
When you die, you'll have to tell me all about it.
Rogue Runners, an actual play audio drama made during the pandemic, all while maintaining proper social distancing.
And I'll follow at a 6-foot distance.
How about a 5-foot distance for D&D purposes?
Sure.
Okay.